Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled, Is Our Healthcare System Broken? Recorded in 2022, McQuestion Program Perspectives Matter co-host Vince Pacente leads a panel discussion about America's healthcare system with Marianne Faison, PhD, President and CEO of Texas Business Group on Health, Todd Furness, author of The 60% Solution, Rethinking Healthcare in the U.S., and Jim Holder, a partner at the healthcare insurance consulting firm Holmes Murphy. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Is our U.S. healthcare system broken? It's complicated, it's expensive, and some say it's even headed towards implosion. So this healthcare system for Americans is something, insurance, that they don't feel they can afford for the actual healthcare they can't afford. This is a difficult situation we're facing, and we need to figure out how to keep costs down while insurance companies may be actually discouraging care, which has people abandon any kind of chance of saying, well, wait a minute, maybe I don't need that care, and they may miss out on that. So our present healthcare system is unsustainable, and what can we do about it? Let's hear from my experts and see what they have to say. Now, first we have Jim Holder. He's a partner with Holmes Murphy, and they actually reduce costs on healthcare for companies. Also, we have Dr. Marianne Faison. She's president and CEO of Texas Business Group on Health. And we also have Mr. Todd Furness. He's the author of The 60% Solution, Rethinking Healthcare in the U.S. In a recent Newsweek headline, it said, how bad is the U.S. healthcare system? Among high-income nations, it's the worst, this study says. So do we really have the highest cost, lowest quality healthcare system? Todd, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think you have to break it up into two parts. First of all, we have a very, I would assert we have a very high quality care capability. We have a very bad cost of capability or price. So if you take a look at the issues we have as a census, you know, life expectancy is lower than it would be in other developed nations. It's 77 years versus 83 in other nations. We have chronic disease problems, which are problematic, which are running about 24.6% versus, you know, 18% elsewhere. And then we have a monstrous obesity problem, which I think is the single greatest threat to our nation's health, far outreaching any other, which is about 40% of adults. So those are the problems. But to say that we don't have good care, I think is a misstatement and an overcharacterization. You know, we have over a million medical tourists every year. Canada's system, which is rated higher, as you know, we have 100,000 people from Canada coming into the United States every year for service. And I can go on with a list of accolades for, you know, research and development and medicines and facilities and equipment. Quite honestly, the U.S. has had just so much more money to invest into healthcare that we are the envy of virtually every other country in the world.
Marianne, what about from your perspective? This Newsweek's article saying we have the worst healthcare system. What's your worst healthcare? What do you believe it is?
Well, I would say emphatically no. I disagree completely with that. We do not have the worst healthcare system. We have some of the best medical care in the world. We have the greatest medical advancements. We have very high quality health care most of the time. What we have is broken about it is the affordability and the access. And I think was already mentioned about the high cost of health care. That's the number one driver of the brokenness in the healthcare system. And that absolutely impacts the quality, but we have the capability of delivering wonderful health care. And again, as long as it's affordable, which it is not, and as well as it is easily accessible, which it is not.
Yeah, and to that point, Jim, when, you know, Marianne said this, Todd said this, it's pretty well known. We have a great healthcare system, yet it's still health insurance that people can't afford for the healthcare they seemingly can't afford. So what are your perspectives on that?
You need to start that health insurance is a financing mechanism. It doesn't guarantee you healthcare at all. Sadly, the last two decades, employers have solve for the affordability of health insurance for their employees by cost shifting enormous burdens in the form of higher deductibles and higher out of pockets to their employees. So at the end of the day, we've created a system where we have a lot of people walking around with a health insurance ID card in their wallet, but they are unable to afford the care. Federal Reserve tells us that most people can afford a $400 unplanned event and the average deductible is $1,600. So at the end of the day, what we need to do is create affordability. And we see people skipping needed care because they just can't afford it. So I think we have a financing mechanism. We have a great healthcare system. But to a lot of Americans, Vince, it's just simply out of reach for them to have access to great healthcare because they can't afford it.
Now, Todd, writing the 60% solution, did a lot of research. How did we get in this situation with health insurance, and how did it get so complicated?
Well, it started in 1943, actually, when FDR correctly pointed out that we were going to have a labor shortage because of the Second World War. And he was right. And he said, I'm not going to let anybody compete on wages. So I'm going to freeze wages, but I'm going to allow you to provide benefits as a function of compensation. But I'm going to allow you to write that off as a business expense, but I'm not going to tax the recipient on the receipt of those benefits as compensation. So it basically created this aberration in tax policy. And that was, again, recodified in 1954. But you know, as a result of this, the U.S. Treasury loses about $500 billion annually. And so we have this increasing number of people who want to get benefits through their companies, not including Medicaid and not including Medicare. And that's why I wrote the book, The 60% Solution. That's why I called it that, was because roughly 20% of Americans are on Medicaid, another 20% are on Medicare, and everybody else is in the middle.
Marianne, from a corporate perspective, what trends are you seeing us experiencing right now?
Well, it helps to put healthcare in perspective as far as the coverage goes. Most, 54% of Americans are covered by employer-sponsored health insurance, and that would be 62%. Of the adult workforce, which would be age 19 to 64. So most of the healthcare coverage is not coming from the government. That's only about 33%, but is coming through the employers. And healthcare is a $4 trillion industry right now, with Texas being one of the highest costs. In fact, a couple years ago, it was rated by Johns Hopkins Research Group that it is the most expensive place to get healthcare. Nationwide, the cost that the share of that employees pay for healthcare is about $8,000 right now for single coverage out of their pocket. And that's for premiums, co-pays, deductibles, and everything else that they're paying out of pocket. And if they have a family coverage, they're paying about $28,000 a year out of their own pocket to cover that. Now, that's only about 20%. Of what the employers are paying. The other part is completely covered by the employers who are sponsoring the insurance company. Mm. So, the insurance coverage. So, the healthcare insurance side of it and the healthcare coverage that employers are paying is the third highest cost for employers. Payroll, obviously, is going to be the highest, and facility cost, but health insurance is the third highest. It's a major issue. Employers are stuck they're carrying the most of the cost of it, but they're trying to keep it affordable for their employees, which is what Jim was saying. They delay care, they avoid care, they can't afford the prescriptions, they don't get the meds, their conditions get worse. And so that's the broken piece of the healthcare system, in my opinion. It's this problem with the affordability and the access.
Well, Jim, you must be listening intently because you're hearing from the corporate perspective and you're the person to come in and kind of try and fix this. So you've got the employer's perspective, the employee's perspective. What pushback is occurring from your side of things?
Well, I think that there's not a lot of pushback other than how do we solve the affordability, whether it's a business, whether it's an employee, whether it's government. It's like Marianne said, it's the number two or three highest expense that people face. And if you look at our federal government, it's a huge, massive liability. So as we step back, we've created a financing mechanism through our health insurance, through the Affordable Health Care Act, but we need to blend how you finance care with how you receive care. And you need to do that in a way that takes the individual into it. And at our firm, we always really focus on there's three enemies. The enemy is disease. So are you working on a disease battle plan within a population? I think Todd mentioned that obesity is our number one concern, and it's fueling diabetes, and it's fueling a massive consumption of healthcare service. The other second enemy is complexity. I mean, even people that are astutely aware of how to access the system, it's enormously complex. So the complexity in the system. And the third, whether you're an employer, whether you're a government, you know, the status quo is not going to solve the cost crisis, is not going to solve anything in this country. So I think what we see is employers that really need to think differently are starting to act on their own and do things in the best interests of their bottom line, but also in the best interest of taking care of their employees and their dependents. Our chief medical officer always says that cost is a surrogate of the pain and suffering within a population. So you've got to approach it a little bit differently. And I think that's why the status quo is probably the number one enemy before disease and complexity, because people want to buy products. They want to do things that are easy instead of doing the right things to address this. And we're seeing a lot of innovation across the employer market to really tackle this.
That's such a key word, this status quo. And it really leads us to think that this is headed towards implosion. You know, when we talk about that, Todd, what other issues do you see us having to keep in mind as we look for solutions?
Well, I think the biggest concern I have is the amount of the percentage of our population, which is either unserved or underserved. And I fear that that's growing for a whole bunch of bad reasons. And we've got to figure out how to solve that. And I like to say that it's going to take a tapestry of business models to solve that problem, which includes public-private partnerships and private insurance and government pay. One solution isn't going to fit all, and we need to solve the problem differently. But I think that the reason that I kind of wrote my book in the way that I did was asserting that the best way to get there is increase consumerism, because that'll drive price down for everybody. The more cash payments we could do, then the better we would be off as an industry and as a country. And to the extent that you can further that by using your HSA or your health savings account or your flexible savings account dollars, which are tax protected, that's all the better. And that all that would do is drive prices down for everybody. Right now, the insurance price that's theoretically negotiated is oftentimes as much as 7 or more times more expensive than the cash price.
Okay, Marianne, you know, you must be sitting there seeing what's going on. You know, the benefits are seemingly reducing. Deductibles are going higher and corporations are being forced with a decision. Where are we going to pass these costs on to? And that's maybe to the employees. What's the tipping point? What's going to create change that we're all seemingly understanding needs to happen? But what's that tipping point, do you see?
Well, I think the tipping point is, I think, has already been reached for many people, as we were saying, that they avoid healthcare if they can, because they can't afford it. They don't have the $400 in their account to pay for an emergency or something. But I think that when we try to fix something broken, I think if we're just pushing on the cost of healthcare, we're just kind of pushing the balloon and it's going to pop out on the other side. There's just actual structural changes that are needed. A couple of things. One would be our fee-for-service system, payment system. That is, I think, is the biggest driver of cost increases, because the way it's set up is hospitals and physicians are incentivized to do more. Whether it's the right care or the wrong care or duplicate care and everything else, and they're paid on the basis of how many services they're doing. So there are a few models that we're struggling with or trying to put in place, which would be called the value-based benefits model, where physicians and hospitals get paid for their performance. And that's a complicated arrangement to try to change a traditional system that we have. The second part of it is the third-party payment system. That's the insurance company standing there as the middleman between the patient, the employer who's paying the bill over here, and the providers, the hospitals, systems, and the physicians. And shielding the patients from any, if they have good insurance, shielding them from the true cost of care. And then the pricing, of course, is so hidden and so complicated between what the insurance companies are contracting with the providers on behalf of the patients and the employers who are paying. They wield enormous control over which hospitals are in network or out of network, which doctors are in and out, and so on, making the system so convoluted and so complex that and the pricing so beneficial to the hospitals, physician groups, and the health plans, which have the highest rate of inflation of any of the other healthcare system services this past year. So if we get to the structure of our healthcare system, that might solve some problems. But the way it is today, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Well, yes, that's why we're talking about this. This uphill battle is frustrating. And also there's some controversial elements. And Todd, I'd like you to jump in here about what controversial elements could be changed and who could advocate for that change, do you think?
Well, I think here's one statistic that if it could drive the entire conversation for another week, we'd be, I think, all benefited. And that is between 1975 and 2010, the number of doctors increased by 150%. The number of administrators increased by 3,200%. Okay, so that's cost to the system. So when Marianne referred to the administrative costs and how that's gone up and it reflects over 25% of your bill, that's actually a low estimate in my view. Now it's about one doctor for every 10 administrators. So we've got to get back, that's why I say we've got to get back to cash payments. This is the same thing that Jim referred to, where we have, and Marianne referred to, we have an intermediary paying the bill. So essentially what we're doing is we're paying somebody to pay for our healthcare. And that doesn't make any walking around sense, as we say here in Texas.
It's so frustrating to really fully understand this. And at the same time, understand that some things are working well. It's really a glass half empty that we're talking about. So Marianne, let's jump over to you and say, what is working well? What's the glass half full perspective?
Well, I think because the employers cover such a large proportion of the population, and the government is the big gorilla and can do a whole lot more because they have huge volume and lots of people that they're covering. They also include what's not included in that employer coverage, all the Medicare and Medicaid and all of the other ones. Some of the things that are working, as I mentioned it early, would be the value-based insurance coverage, where the hospitals and physician groups are actually paid when they do well and they avoid the waste duplications. And when the information is interconnected and readily available instead of housed in all kinds of different places, one in the physician's office, one over there at the hospital, they have that. The employer has their information. So it's we have the technology to do those things, to connect e-health and digital health, but it's not applied very often, and it's getting there slowly. I think that if we can have good metrics to measure proper performance, which ought to focus on outcomes, not so much on do they give them enough all the medicines or whatever, but it's really what happens to the patient. Do they get the right medicine? Do they get the right treatment? Were any sponges left in the patient after surgery? That would be a patient safety issue. And then the transparency, I think, is the most important thing. And thank God that the federal government has gotten in on that act and has, as price transparency has already mandated that hospitals and insurance companies show their prices that they're negotiating and what the prices of different hospital services are. Hospitals aren't complying very well yet, but they're going to have to, or the penalty is going to be much more severe than $100 a day.
Jim, I can see you nodding, and you spend every waking moment of your life trying to decrease costs. So let's talk about those costs and what do we do to fix these costs and impacting the system as well? How do we make sure these costs get reduced and improve our system?
Well, I think James Carville, when he helped President Clinton get elected, he said it's the economy, stupid, and you certainly hit the nail on the head. It's about cost. So I think there's three things driving cost. Number one, the federal government, 10,000 people turn 65 a day. So we have a discrimination between what private employers pay for the same service as the federal government through Medicare. Medicaid reimburses lower. So we got to fix our payer mix on how we reimburse our providers. So I think that's first and foremost. Second is we're running into a challenge on the supply side. You know, a third of our doctors and a third of our nurses have said they want to work fewer hours or coming out of this pandemic with not a lot of energy. So they're not wanting to work a third fewer hours to make a third less money. So I think the issue is we've got to fix our supply side on the delivery side. We have more hospitals, we have more of that. We need more doctors that do things for us instead of do things to us. So I think primary care is critical to that. I think we have to understand as a society that there's a social determinant of health mix where Todd lives. Healthcare is a lot better than where it is 5 miles from where he lives. So there's people in our country that have access to great healthcare and there's people that don't. So we have to realize the social determinants of health. And I think the third thing is, you know, the system is as perfectly designed for the profitability of the hospitals, the pharmaceutical companies, and the health insurance companies. The health insurance companies where I came from had record earnings during the pandemic. So nobody really has a vested interest from the pharmaceutical, the PBMs, the health insurers, and the hospitals to hold down costs. And I think Mary Ann's mentioned the value-based approach. You know, we can't take complexity to solve the problem. So I think we almost have to implode the status quo and revisit it. And I think a lot of innovative employers, one breath of hope that I see is I really follow what's happening on Medicare Advantage. You know, the consumers, the 65 plus, the consumers seem to like it. The insurance companies seem to like it and the providers like it. So I think that's a model, and that most of that model is rooted in primary care owning the life cycle of the treatment for those elderly patients. So I think that's a model that we can look across the continuum, whether you're working every day from 19 to 64 or you're on Medicaid. I think some of the innovation we're seeing out of CMS for Medicare can really be a breath of hope to address cost.
That status quo is something that it would be lovely to have a reset button, right? But
yeah.
Todd, from your perspective, and what wholesale change could we actually realistically do to fix our system in the U.S. healthcare system?
Well, I have a friend of mine who's developed a database, for example, of 16,000 facilities that handle routine care on a cash price basis. And again, I want to make sure this number really resonates with you. The cash price can be as low or lower than 1/7 of the negotiated insurance price. And so the idea of going to cash and not having to file a claim, not having to hire all the people to file a claim, not waiting 60 to 90 to 180 days to get your cash, not having to go through a first-time rejection of a claim because any of a number of reasons, about 20% of all claims are rejected on the first pass, not having to go through a question of medical need necessity. All of those things add expense to the system that is completely unnecessary. Because if we go back to paying cash and eliminate the middlemen, then I think we have a game changer of a system, and we have consumerism that would drive prices through the floor. It'd make it far more affordable to a far greater segment of our population.
Okay, so the middlemen aren't going to give this up, right? They're going to put up a fight when it comes to saying, we want to keep this. I mean, your statistics are shocking when it comes to how much extra spend is unnecessary. How does that happen how do you have the middlemen say, okay, you go ahead, you know, just take the money?
You're absolutely right. They're not going to do that. And I had a situation as recently as 2 days ago where I said, hey, we can save you all this money. And they said, yeah, we'll talk about it in 60 days, which is really a postponement of 18 months for the discussion. It was unimaginable. So you used the word status quo earlier. Mm-hmm. This is intransigence on a level that is Marvel worthy. It should be in the comics. It's so outrageous.
So in your mind, you see a cartoon happening with the U.S. healthcare system, and we need to be able to get back to reality?
Yeah, I see evil characters in all black saying, bah, we're going to take your healthcare dollars.
Where's Dr. Evil when you need him, right? All right. So, Mary Ann, from the corporate perspective, you know, the average American, what can they do to better deal with the healthcare system in our country?
Well, I think number one, well, there are a lot of different number ones. So one of the many things that can be done, I think would have an impact, is to, and I think you might have mentioned this earlier, Todd, about the patient themselves. Patients lack complete awareness, or have no idea what the cost of healthcare is. when you talk about a cash basis, I think they would be absolutely shocked. But of course, price right now has nothing to do with or any correlation with the actual cost of goods, cost of delivering healthcare or equipment or bandages or whatever, of the drug itself. But patients have been shielded because of the model that I mentioned earlier, the insurance third-party care model. But we're trying through our employers are trying very hard to educate their employees to be smart consumers of healthcare and to look up the quality of care and the patient, the leapfrog patient safety scores and some of the other quality metrics that the government actually has. We're trying to also educate them to look to themselves, to look at their own health and take some responsibility for their own health. There's an attitude among Americans, myself included, that we can fix anything. Healthcare can fix anything, any problem we have. And that's not the reality. The healthcare can go mitigate a lot of things once somebody's already gotten obesity or diabetes or whatever, or suffers from a chronic condition. And the other issues that we're trying to address by the employers are really the inequities in the access to healthcare, aside from the affordability that I already mentioned. If you don't have transportation, if you live in an area of a community where you can't get or you have a job that doesn't allow you to take off time off to get to the doctor, if you don't have your cancer screenings available at your company, vaccinations, everything else, if you have the ethnic disparities in the types of conditions that people are more susceptible to, and especially we call it the social determinants of health, which is where you live, where you how you get around, where you buy your food. We talk about food desert. The patient themselves would have a huge impact if we had more understanding of how the healthcare system works and what it costs, and how that they can improve their own access and their health.
Well, if I could summarize, it's everybody watching, we're all part of the solution, or can be, I mean, in terms of being proactive. Also being proactive on the corporate side of things, looking at administrative costs that could be measured. And in terms of even the insurance companies, being part of the solution instead of what I'm hearing is part of the problem. So I'd like to thank all three of you, Todd Furness, Jim Holder, and Dr. Marianne Frazen, for your ideas to fix our healthcare system. And a special thank you for joining us. We hope you've heard something that's interesting, that insights that you can use. Join us on mcquistiontv.com, YouTube, and social media. And as always, we appreciate you being with us as we discuss unique perspectives on things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.